So the big question is this: how do entrepreneurial salespeople like us, who have traditionally sold alone and used gut and intuition to hit their number, take their innate talents and begin selling using science, technology, and the secrets of thousands who have done it before to crush their quota and change the world? That is the question, and this podcast provides the answers. Welcome, everybody, to today's podcast. We're going to be talking about AI and technology and all the goodies around that. And to do that, we've got Christopher Fago. I actually thought he was at a different company, but the company was purchased recently. He was at Redlock, was purchased by Palo Alto Networks, but he's currently the Cloud Security Inside Sales Manager over there. Christopher, thanks so much for joining. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good, man. I appreciate you jumping on. It'll be fun because I know as we were talking pre-show, this idea of kind of scaling using technology, what role data has in that. I'm excited to jump in. I often like to ask people a little bit about themselves before we dive in. Can you tell me maybe just real quick a little bit about yourself and what you do over there at Palo Alto Network?
Yeah, sure. So a little background on me. Going on, I believe, 8 years in sales. I previously worked in the music industry, but found a calling in technology sales. So I started out as a data intern at a healthcare intelligence firm. So I want you to think like Discover.org for healthcare.
Got it.
Right. I did that for 6 years. I was an account manager there doing renewals and, customer service. And then I really wanted to leave the healthcare market, get into tech, mainly because in healthcare, everyone was like twice my age. It's kind of an old man's game. Right. And so I wanted to get into tech. And the best way I found to get into technology was to start as an SDR, which was being pivoted or positioned to me as an entry-level position. Little did I know, it was not entry-level at all, based on the, you know, the requisite needs of that role. So I did that for a couple of years at a mobile testing company. And then I came over to Redlock to start their SDR team in June of 2017.
Got it. And then you did that for a handful of years. And that's kind of what we'll be talking about today, is some of the lessons learned as you kind of grew that team from kind of scratch, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I was tasked with the go-to-market strategy for outbound for our inside team. And, you know, we had really aggressive goals, and hitting those goals allowed us to get acquired in 15 months, or sorry, 17 months.
That's awesome, man.
But that's why technology was so such a requirement, because we had to hit these aggressive goals, and we didn't necessarily have the runtime.
Yeah, the people time
as well. To let people ramp.
Yeah, interesting. Well, let's get into that. But I do want to know, outside of work, I always like to kind of get someone of their passions. Any hobbies or things you do outside of work humanize you a little bit here?
Yeah, so I have two cats. I like to go to the gym. I'm married, and that's pretty much it.
I love that. That was great, man. Two cats, go to the gym, and married. Those all really connect together really well.
Yeah, it's a nice circle, right?
Yeah, that's right. The circle.
No, I live here in Atlanta, and I've lived here for 11 years, and so it's a great city to kind of hang out, and there's always something going on.
Yeah, man, it's buzzing, especially with some of the tech stuff going on. I don't blame you. So let's dive into this concept. You had some, just to kind of reframe that, you had some really aggressive goals, wanted to exit, didn't have the ramp time. Your mind kind of said, I got to move to technology. Walk us through that process and kind of, well, the thought process of how you attacked that.
Yeah, so when I came on in June of 2017 as like the first SDR, I had a lot of flexibility. What I wanted to do is make sure that before we brought on any additional team members, that I personally myself could be successful. I actually think a lot of companies don't think about that. I know a lot of companies like to hire in pairs. I think that is somewhat because they know if one fails, they still have one person there.
Got it.
Which is a negative mindset, but ultimately I wanted to make sure I could get in, kind of lay down some framework, find some success, and then find someone that I felt was truly capable of having a high pain tolerance for an early stage Series A startup.
Got it. Interesting. So you kind of, but this was newer for you. Well, you'd done a little bit of tech, but it was fairly new for you, right? From an experience standpoint?
Yeah, I'd cut my teeth a year and a half in the mobile testing world as a sales development rep there. Kind of learned a little bit through conferences throughout the, you know, we have a great industry with a plethora of conferences that provide great speakers and great tracks. So I kind of just wanted to become a sponge and absorb all the great leadership we have, because we've definitely seen a kind of like a revitalization of sales leaders. So I took all that knowledge and training and thought about how I would best apply it. And that's why making sure that I was successful before hiring another person, it might sound selfish,
yeah,
but I'd rather not see someone drown than have to constantly help them swim.
That's awesome. I love that, man. I want to steal that one. Do you feel like, you started and you were kind of the individual person and then you grew up from there. But I feel like there's lessons even for people who have larger teams who are kind of thinking like, you know, you can't really, you got to nail it before you scale it. Right. How did you, and maybe this is some of the secret sauce, how did you start to just nail that? I mean, obviously, again, technology kind of played a role, but what were some of the things that you did in order to nail that down? So when you brought people on, you didn't, first of all, need to bring on 50 because you kind of had a machine working, but what was some of those secret sauce there?
So the great thing about public cloud and the adoption rate means that there's pretty much every company's utilizing the public cloud. I'm sure you guys are in one of the three major clouds today. I'm not here to sell you though. And because of the adoption, the receptivity of products in that industry has been just really amazing. I've never worked anywhere. I mean, this is, I guess, my third industry where people actually like really want to talk to you. Yeah. And they're nice. And they, as long as you approach them as a vendor from an education and awareness standpoint and less like salesy,
mm-hmm.
they kind of want to have that conversation because in the end, we're all in this together. So if you're in the public cloud, you got to get security right because it's not only your company's name that's on the line. It's all the people you have in your database that you're storing in the cloud on the line. So really what was most important to nailing it before scaling it was just making sure that we could create that predictable revenue, right? The ability to find a sales process. So when I started, we actually didn't have a technical resource on the East Coast, which meant we had to figure out how to best prioritize our time so that we only scheduled calls with our technical resource when they were serious enough. So they weren't just evaluating, they were actually interested.
Got it.
So we did a lot of 30-minute calls where we basically said, look, we're not going to show you a demo. If you want to see a demo, we'll schedule another call, but we need to know you're serious.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a lot, as a startup, we don't have a lot of resources. And I think that actually came across.
So you went, you kind of like really qualified, like, was that part of the question? Or how did you kind of frame that to make sure you found the balance of being, you know?
I mean, there was politeness to it, right? It was essentially, you know, an ask at the beginning of the call that like, if any time they don't feel like they're a good fit, or if we don't feel like they're a good fit, we can walk away as friends and not have any hard feelings. And that's, I think that's a problem not enough startups are willing to face because they don't want to say no. And that often means that they're being too free with their schedules.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes if you don't go into that extra push or that extra qualification, it doesn't lend itself to very, it just lends itself to sometimes junk, you know, it's junk coming through but a lot of people don't go that hard, but you felt like it did end up working out fairly well to kind of take that extra qualification step.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely just allowed us to buy time, so to speak, for our technical resources on the West Coast to be available. A couple months later, after that process was, you know, kind of going, we hired a technical resource on the East. So even though he was on our time zone, we still stuck to the process because it allowed us to do more, right? Would you rather do, you know, 4 1-hour demos or 8 30-minute calls? You're probably going to want to take the volume, at least in this early stage where you're just trying to find, you know, the most at bats.
Yeah, interesting. So so one piece of this kind of scaling was just being a little more selective about the way you kind of qualify and choose. Can you dive a little deeper into this technology thing? It found like you were really able to And again, as we've talked, it's not necessarily about the vendors themselves, but it sounds like you were able to get a tech stack that really was just enabled you to do more. And I find that I thought that was such a cool part of the story, because I just find that oftentimes people, they go to tech stacks and they think they're going to be kind of like, it's going to do it for them. But it sounds like you were able to kind of, again, build something and get a tech stack that enabled you to actually sell more rather than, you know, not sell more. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So for the first 6 months, so from June to December of 2017, you know, it was all outbound, all manual dialing, and things were going well. I think we were averaging, myself, before we added an SDR, we were averaging, I think, like 10 to 13 meetings from our outbound process. And we came into 2018, we had added a headcount, and we really wanted to figure out our approach. So there were two trains of thought. It was either interview and try and scale the team from 2 to 6, and then from 6 to 10, or see how well we could get both myself and my counterpart, Patrick, ramped up and like educated and prepared to almost like be able to be more than one person. And so we went through a pretty rigorous interview month where we interviewed 12 people, and they were either on the high end of the compensation or on the low end of the experience. And ultimately, it just didn't feel right. You got to trust your gut. And the gut feeling that I had was, I like myself. I feel confident. I like Patrick. Patrick's been hanging out with me for a good couple months now. I feel confident in his abilities. Why don't we just double down on technology instead of going this headcount route? Headcount is great. It helps you scale, but it also has its own caveats, like PTO, medical. You know, essentially, if you're going to pay out commission, why don't you just pay out the same amount of commission to two people and know that you have the most reliable team on deck?
Got it. Yeah. So you were able, it was still a small team, but you were able to find kind of the right people on the bus in order to get this moving in the right direction. So what else did you feel like were some of those keys to get this, again, this engine revved and get it up to? And I want to ask you, if possible, about some of the milestones or things you were able to achieve, but let's get there in a minute. Any other kind of secrets to that process? Again, a little bit of the qualification, right people, some technology. Anything else jump out to you?
So from on the technology front, we made sure we had a sales engagement platform. We made sure we had a high volume dialer, right? Because at the end of the day, we're trying to do 2 to 3x the amount of work we were previously doing, right? If we want to get to 6 people, and there's 2 of us, we have to do 3x. So we wanted to make sure that we could capture that level of activity and still have that coverage for the territories between just the 2 of us. So, you know, we got the engagement platform, got the high volume dialer. And then, you know, I worked with Ryan Reissert, who I'm sure you're familiar with too.
Yeah. Ryan. Kind of
flesh Ryan and Rex Beaverson to flesh out this funnel. And rethink how we work. So essentially, you know, I think most sales models, you have your inbound and your outbound, and that's kind of your whole funnel, right? For sales development. We introduced a third tier, which was priority. So because we were using the high volume dialer, you know, we had inbound, priority, and outbound. Got and it. The priority people were anybody we had a conversation with, regardless of the outcome, unless the outcome was success. So if I called you up, Gabe, and you were like, "Hey, Chris, I'm busy. Give me a call back tomorrow." You are now in Salesforce and in our sales engagement platform, a priority stage. So we created an entire stage for you. So it's basically a bucket. And every day, at the bare minimum, all you got to do is your inbound and your priority. And you technically checked the box and you can go home if you had other things going on.
Interesting. So dive into this, because this concept of you've mentioned this kind of high volume dialing capability. Explain maybe just a little bit, if you can, go just a little bit deeper so people understand, like, that really was able to kind of like go prospecting on steroids, right? I mean, you were dialing upwards of, like, instead of 100 person, you know, 50 per person per day, was like 500 or 800 with some of these cool technologies out there. Is that correct?
Yeah. And actually, So we did have a daily cap of 400.
400, okay.
What was nice about it was as you start to use, so to go back just a little bit and unpack, you're right, hardcore prospecting. you have to have your list. These tools are worthless without the ability to find the right people to call. Because you don't want to just call anybody. You want to call the people you're interested in solving problems for. So, you know, you take that into account, right? It definitely took a lot longer to prospect because it was such a large quantity that you needed. But once you had that finished, you're right, you had the ability to kind of do activities in high volume.
Yeah.
And as the data started to, you know, come to us, you know, I'm a big fan of the movie and the book Moneyball.
Yeah, of course, man. Yeah, you're talking. I'm a fan as well. Love it. Yeah.
I ended up, you know, taking the data analysis and actually pivoting my entire schedule. You know, the data said that I think it was after like 30,000 calls that I pretty much should only call Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So from an expectation standpoint, obviously, I don't want anyone in management to think I'm not working on Monday or Tuesday. But also, you know, we're not just here to throw up numbers. Right. We're here to assess. So having that conversation, say, hey, look, here's the numbers. Here's the numbers. Don't lie. I should really just focus all my calls towards the latter end of the week. And Friday was my best day, which I know I'm sure everyone listening is wondering when they should call. If you're not calling Friday afternoon, you're doing it wrong.
Interesting. Interesting. Love it. So that was something that you guys just found to be really successful, right? That was kind of an optimal time for you to get conversations.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, Monday everyone's in the office and, you know, they're definitely in a bind because they got to work and, you know, they're not happy to be there. But Friday, everyone's there and Friday afternoon, everyone's kind of decompressing, right? Their week's over. They're thinking about, you know, what they're going to do on Saturday.
I actually really agree. I mean, sometimes, you know, that's subjective, but yeah, I find myself that I really, you know, just Friday afternoon and things do kind of slow down. I'm probably pretty open to taking a phone call, to be honest. So that's awesome.
And that was, you know, it's funny is, you feel like you're pretty open, but the data was just telling me like, you know, the dial to conversation rate on Thursday and Friday and the success rate to, you know, an initial meeting was so undeniable that you'd have to kind of be, an idiot to just keep doing and even, you know, instead of doing 400 a day, why not do, you know, 800 on Thursday and Friday and try to, you know, maximize your Powerball.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's kind of the Moneyball approach, right? Find the time. And that's something I just feel like people don't really dive into. I mean, and guys, I don't know if that, you know, makes or breaks your business. Is the difference of calling, you know, during your optimal times, $100 million difference or something like that? Probably not. But again, as he said, the Moneyball concept is right, man. If you could increase your conversation rate by 5%, that translates into, you know, another X number of opportunities and then X number in deals. And so it's that small percentages, if you find few, and again, for you, it may have actually been a huge, huge difference, but I feel like sometimes people are like, oh, I don't want to mess with that because it's small. But guys, in sales, it's all about that extra, you know, you increase your close rate by, you know, just a couple percentage points. That can make a big difference. Your conversation rate by just a couple makes a big difference. So I appreciate bringing that up.
No, I think you're totally right. I actually think too many sales professionals, especially in the younger demographic, are swayed by success in big multiples, right? Everyone wants to be better, make more money, be an A player, but everyone wants that 10X and nobody wants that 1%, right? Nobody wants to just get 1% better because they feel like it's not enough. But that's why shifting my, you know, if, as you said, like if I shift my stuff to Friday afternoon and I get, let's just say I get one more meeting a week, that's four meetings a month, which should ultimately at the very least be one deal in the grand scheme of
that's
things, right?
Right.
If you do the math of sales, and ultimately, when you're in a especially if you're in a startup, one deal can be the difference between having power and not having power the next month.
Yeah, I mean, that can make a big difference there. So as we kind of wrap here, it's interesting conversation. Can you kind of, I mean, you mentioned that the company got bought, but in order to do that, you guys did have to hit some numbers, and I'm not expecting to say, you know, we did X number of things, but how, anything you can share with this audience that kind of demonstrated or showed, like, guys, look, if you're able to nail down some of this concept around people, process, technology, you know, we were really able, it sounds like you guys were successful. You got bought. How did it turn out for you? Anything you can share there?
Yeah. So I think at the beginning of the conversation, you know, I'd mentioned that in the first 6 months, we did have outbound success, but I think our best month was like 13, which is, you know, it's nothing to sneeze at, but our best month, after we got, you know, our high volume dialer and our kind of our tech stack figured out was 26, right?
Really?
Now it wasn't 26 outbound. There was obviously, I think every funnel has healthy inbound outbound.
Sure.
But it's when you can hit your stride in both at the same time, right? If you have a good marketing department like we did and they have a good month.
That's a big difference. Yep.
And you have a good month, in it's all about rowing the boat together. So you're not just going in circles. So, I mean, I've been a part of organizations where marketing had a great month and I had a bad month and vice versa. But it's all about when you hit that stride at the same time, you know, you can really, we, you know, 26 ended up being 2X, which was always the goal for the awesome. SDR team, was just to be two people.
I love it.
So then having two of us, we actually had four of us, but you only had to worry about two of us.
I love it, man. Kudos. It's, how do you double your prospecting efforts? I think you've hit on a couple cool things. And we did kind of jump around a little bit. I mean, if you had to kind of summarize, what would you recommend if people are looking to just quickly nail and scale? I like that.
Yeah, I think you got to figure out your top five titles within your sales process, right? Yeah. And you got to build the biggest list as possible. I really truly believe that you need to try and cast a wide net. Yeah. And I'm not saying spray and pray. I'm just saying at least pick up the phone and get a high volume dialer and call
List. I like that, because I do feel like we've gotten this thing where it's like it's got to be extremely personalized, or it's got to be spray and pray, and it's kind of like, come on, you guys, like, what happened to the best? I've mocked the guys that fish with nets versus fish with spears. I'm like, what happened to fishing with dynamite? You know, it's like, do I have to literally do both? Like, why can't I have the best of both worlds?
You know, so. And I think that's, look, that's certainly possible. There's no one is here to say you can't have the best of both worlds. You know, we had different, messaging for different people, but at the end of the day, regardless of whether or not they were getting personalized messaging or persona based messaging, they were still getting the high volume calls. And that's important because I think, look, you go on LinkedIn right now, I'm sure you can find like 20 articles about how cold calling is dead and about how AI is going to replace your job. I think all those people just want to not work.
Yeah.
They don't want to do the work. They don't want to own the idea. So, you know, we had a lot of flexibility in how we attacked the market, but at the end of the day, we just had to make sure we did call the people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that. Again, I just think you're right. Like, I'm a fan of this concept of, just like you said, it's like they're doing high activities to a target audience. Like, great. You know, that doesn't mean you're just spraying and praying because you're using, for example, like a high volume dialer set or an engagement tool. Now, again, I've seen it. I was with a company in Boston, and this lady said, I've got my SDR team is just a bunch of email marketers with their sales engagement tool. All they do is just email thousands of people a day. And I'm like, okay, that's probably pushing it a little far. You're right. But there is a balance, you guys. And I think, you know, Chris, I think, you know, definitely hit on that. So, Chris, really appreciate you jumping on. We've probably gone a little longer than I normally do. I love the talk track, though. If someone wants to get in touch with you, learn a little bit more about what you're doing, ask for some advice, any thoughts or comments on that?
Go to LinkedIn, look up Christopher Fago. That's Fago. Would love to connect with anybody in sales, no matter where they're at in their career, just to see how we can help each other get better.
Love it. Okay. Thanks so much for joining, Christopher. For the audience, remember, success is just one play away. Want more sales secrets? Go to salessecrets.io to receive copies of our latest research and best practice content to help you crush your quota.